For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:05 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, welcome back to the show. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday from 6 till 8 a.m. right here on 104.5 WOKV. I'm joined by the big guy,
yeah.
Sasquatch the Yeti, 6 foot six, 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal, Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, certified master inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on Home and Garden TV and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, and we mix it up in the middle. But what makes the show fun for us is you. Your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. Here comes the number. Break out your crayon.
Got it.
855-765-1045. And if you're watching the live video stream on Facebook or YouTube, you can also send us pictures, commentary, even video right in the live stream. So we're happy to have you from all over the world. Sasquatch, large man.
Yes.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, it is a new year.
Aye, sir. For the sixth year in a row behind my boat, did my polar plunge.
It Make was it.
From the belly button up. Did the polar plunge, New Year's Day here in Jacksonville. It was a nice day. It's probably 65 in the air, 65 in the water. Okay. So it was not my most challenging New Year.
Okay.
Though I have discovered...
What was the water temperature?
About 65. As I say, 65 in the air, 65 in the water. Okay. Would be an approximation.
Not too bad.
Not too bad. I am trying to figure out...
What's the coldest that you've ever been in there?
Oh, high 40s.
Oh, really?
Oh, man. And you can taste them when you jump in there. They rise so high. That's brutal. I was thinking, though, that as I stuck, and I had the video. It's on YouTube and Facebook. It's all over the place. My wife takes the video when I hop in there. I was thinking when I put my tootsie in the water, you know, I stand on the swim platform, stuck my toe, and I'm like, ooh, ooh, ooh. You know, I made some noises as though I was an adolescent girl. And I was like, wow. And I knew it was not really any colder than past years and possibly even warmer.
You're just getting a little older.
That's the vision I had. And I think I may set a policy. I'm not sure. Yeah. We'll get feedback on this. Right. I love yours. So next year, New Year's, well, you know, we'll both be 65 by then.
Mm-hmm. I Wetsuit?
No. That would be blasphemous. I'll take that under advisement. I was thinking not to jump into water where the Fahrenheit temperature is a number lower than my age.
Oh, okay.
And that'll scale kind of nicely over the years, you know.
Or drink more.
There's another idea to have a sip of a beverage that is a proof above the water temperature.
Oh, well,
that will scale nicely over the
years.
That
will warm me up for sure, sure.
Yeah. Though it means I can't live past 150.
But make sure they tie a rope to you, they pull you back up in case you go down.
So New Year's, you know, it's a beautiful thing. It's a time to... you know, prepare your business life, your financial life, your personal life, your home, what you're doing in the home, you know, kind of reset. Hear a lot of people who have resolved to do something as simple as decluttering this year.
Right.
You know, get the clutter out of the way. Man, that feels good. When we moved, when did we move? October? September?
Right, somewhere around there.
Yeah. We have one-third the number of things in the home that we had, you know, when we lived
in the
One-third,
that's one a lot.
One-third. Mm-hmm. Across every category. Step one.
What's that?
I'll tell you in a minute.
Food.
I have one-third the number of shoes, one-third the number of pants, one-third and kept all the undies. Okay. So there's two categories. But essentially, tools,
you only got two pairs.
Everything. One-third the number of things. In a few categories, we have nothing.
Yeah.
I have zero gardening tools other than a handheld, you call that a hoe, the thing with the prongs on it?
Yes.
I have one of those and one little tiny hand shovel for our potted plants. Other than that, everything gone. Everything gone. Went down to Roadhaver Boys Ranch is where that ended up.
Okay.
It was kind of good. So a lot of stuff we sold. Do you know we sold $10,000 worth of stuff out of the house when we moved?
No kidding.
$10,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Now, I probably paid $100,000 over the years to acquire all that stuff.
But that is amazing.
But it's very liberating to declutter. I recommend that. So the one category where I didn't give up one-third of everything was my money.
Oh. Okay, that's good.
Kept every one of my penny jars.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got a big, huge vase full of coins. But you're going to join the new club.
The new club. Tell me what club is that?
$52 billion in sales, you know.
What club is that?
Gardening. But indoor gardening has gone through the roof. I talk about 25% increase.
In indoor.
In any industry, if you have 25% increase, that's a significant amount.
From a landscape industry perspective, the 25% growth in indoor gardening, was that offset by a decline
in
outside?
No, gardening outside is up 10%.
I will.
It's amazing.
Make you the guesstimation.
It's the number one hobby in the world.
Oh, yeah. I get no greater joy than gardening. I would reason to say that I will increase my indoor gardening over this year at least tenfold.
Oh, yeah.
Probably more.
It's a very popular thing happening now.
And how about my balcony? Is my balcony count as indoor gardening or outdoor?
Yeah, I would say it'd be indoor gardening.
It'll be all potted.
Covered. Yeah, I'd say that'd be indoor gardening.
Semi.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
transitional. So, and the millennials are jumping on that. They're just, the biggest growth is in the millennials. 18.
Really?
Yes, yeah.
Now, would that be edibles?
No, they're just indoor plants. They like indoor plants. They call it plant parroting. Parroting.
Yeah.
That's a new.
What is that Japanese term for walking in the forest?
I'm not sure.
Oh, I'll find it during the next break.
Got me.
But there is a movement that originated in Japan, like many things originated in Japan maybe hundreds of years ago, about, I'll call it foresting until I find the word.
The Japanese got some
of going into the just going into the forest and absorbing the forest, the visuals, absorbing the sounds, absorbing the smells, and even the things you can't smell.
Right.
All of the I don't know what they are, pheromones, the different emissions of the plant.
Right.
Even the energy and vibrations of the plant.
I'll have to read about that.
Yeah. So you calm yourself in a meditative state. And allow yourself to absorb the energy of the forest.
Okay.
So I do that on my balcony.
What forest, though? I mean, I can't recall there's any forest out there. You're absorbing a homemade forest, the plants.
Yeah, there are several trees that I can reach off my balcony and touch.
Okay.
There's several palms, which don't really excite me.
Oh, okay, palms. Okay.
And others. One of the trees.
A lot of squirrels?
Squirrels, and it's a roosting tree for some sort of a dove-looking bird.
Oh, okay.
It's really neat. So you go, and it's so interesting when they roost. They all come in about a minute and a half of each other. There's probably 40 of them.
And they
come in like that.
They're making a lot of cooing noises. There probably could be a dove. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe it's a dove of some derivative.
Yeah.
Anyway, declutter, get one with the forest, indoor plants. I like that a lot. Tell me about the adventures of your new year.
The adventures of my new year is just tranquil.
Yeah,
and tranquil.
I was in bed by 9:30.
Yeah, I was about that. Yeah, I just I woke up with all.
But
the
I was up at five.
Fireworks, all the fireworks.
First workout of the new year, 5 a.m.
Five in the morning.
I actually worked out. Well, in my own way.
Move something to that point A to B. That's a workout. Yes,
a body in motion.
A body in motion, right?
Yeah, clear my mind.
But some of the great plants that are really doing well, tropical plants are enjoying a rebirth in as far as popularity of indoor plants, and can be grown on a balcony. The mandevilla is a flowering tropical vine that can be grown on a balcony, and some of the ones that are really having high success are going to be the snake plant. which is a very, very easy plant to grow, low amount of water. And one of the best plants, if you're a complete, you know, unable to grow a plant, you know, and the ZZ plant is the best plant that...
ZZ?
The ZZ plant.
Spell that.
ZZ.
Is there E's in that?
No. ZZ. Just two Z's.
Wow. It is... Does it have like a long beard?
No. It's not, but it's a kind of an arching branch and little leaves on it, and very glossy leaves. This is an amazing plant.
What is it similar to? I'm not familiar.
It's it kind of looks succulent-like, but it looks very vase-shaped. But it is
a thicker, waxy type leaf.
It's from Africa, right? Waxy leaf. But I had one, and I was putting it on TV. We were talking about growing indoor plants, and I had it on TV. And I'd stuck it in the back of my truck, and I wanted to, you know, remember to bring it out. But I left it there about 4 days in the summer. I said, oh, that'd normally kill anything. But I pulled it out, and it was in still great condition.
Really?
Completely dried out.
Just the heat of the bed of the lung.
No, I had it inside the truck.
Oh, in the truck. I thought you left it in the bed.
Inside the truck, you know, where it's getting 150 degrees. And it grows in the lowest light areas that you can imagine. It grows in the African forest, but it grows
low
in very
light
low
and high heat.
High heat and no water. It grows. A lot of times there's these dry forests.
Well, in a super humid environment, it's sucking right. water right out of the air.
Right, but I mean these dry forest grounds, you know, where they don't have any water, there are a lot of understory plants have to be able to grow in a drought condition because the trees absorb most of the water. So that's that, and then this really, really dark green. So it's a nice.
How big?
It will eventually get maybe 2 to 3 feet tall.
Nice.
Very, very slow.
So that would do well on my balcony.
It will do well anywhere. Yeah. I mean, besides cold. It doesn't like cold.
But do you have any more of these?
I don't have any more right now.
Oh,
but
bummer.
I mean, they're still growing them. But, I mean, it's probably the best indoor plant. You got cash?
You got any now?
You know, and things about indoor plants, I think about it. They just tell me what the denomination would be, and I may jar my memory. But the orange is a great thing to have when you have indoor plants.
An orange?
Orange, because...
Inside?
Yes. Because
now, how the heck can an orange tree do well?
No, orange peel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Because, you know, the cats are always nipping on things, you know, and
you get a nice effervescence out of orange peel in the house. It's like your own potpourri.
You could take the orange and rub the plant leaves or put a piece of orange. Animals don't like oranges. You know, we're one of the few animals that it's a retard. It works. They put it in insect repellent.
Yeah.
They put it in many different. It's a cleaner. It is the orange peel has a lot of you know, things in it that are, you know,
repels various
right
bugs.
Exactly. So if you have a cat or you have a dog that's investigating your houseplants and you really like houseplants and you're really frustrated, try the orange.
Investigating.
You know, they always are investigating.
A cat dropping one in your potted plant is not investigating.
Well, maybe they do that too, but they're always investigating things, you know.
Before they drop one.
You can dry them and grind them up and then blend them up in a little spray bottle, and you can spray them on your plant leaves and around the soil on the pond. That should discourage them from, you know, looking at the plant. You know, things like aloe, you know, are very easy to grow. Alocasia is a nice tropical plant that you could, alocasia would be good for you because of that nice tropical leaf, and they come in all different size.
Alocasia sounds like a skin rash. Hey, what do you got?
Alocasia. You can grow calocasia, which is a different variety.
That's the same rash on a different body part.
Oh, yeah. The portadora for you would be good. I love the portadora in a container.
On the balcony or
on the
indoors?
Balcony. It gets a bit, it's very upright. Elephant ear, it grows very upright, and it stays nice and tight.
I love elephant ear.
It doesn't take up much space.
I had an elephant ear in the house on Scott Mill that was probably 8 feet tall.
Wow.
And a good 20 feet across.
Right.
And interestingly, it was originally potted.
Right.
And I'm going to guess it was in a pot 20 years ago.
Right.
And it predates me owning the home a dozen years ago.
It was outside when you bought the house.
And it blew through the pot.
Right.
And by the time we moved there 12 years ago, right, the pot, the remnants of the pot were integral into the root structure above the ground. And there was no extracting it. You know, it was
You put it in the pot and put it inside? Or?
No, it was 20 feet across.
Oh, okay, 20 feet across.
It exploded the pot over the decades.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that happen before. It's, you know, roots are powerful. You know, you look at lifting sidewalks and, you know, even the alocasia or elephant ear plants, which are, well, you would think are kind of fragile root systems, but they have some, they can get some pretty good force behind them. But the portadora I'd really like for a large outside area as a container plant is a great plant. So, you know, if you're thinking about going out and getting some house plants, they got a lot of new varieties out there that are very, very low maintenance. The aloe I like for in case about you have a, you know, little burn in the kitchen. They're very easy grow.
I would imagine if we harvested all the aloe that we presently have on the balcony,
really?
We'd have
that's a very easy
conservatively
plant.
20 pounds.
That's an easy plant.
Yeah,
any kind of aloe, any kind of
aloe. And you can subrogate. What do you call it? You can
propagate
them really easy.
Yeah, yeah.
Practically rip it out and stick it in.
Do yours flower? Do you get yours to flower?
Not often.
Okay, they have a beautiful flower.
Yes.
Yellow flower. If you put them in the morning,
it's a single stalk. It comes out of the center.
Single stalk, yeah. They look
I'm getting to be kind of gardenist.
Yeah. You're getting it figured out.
Uh-huh. It's 6:21 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 6:25 here at 104.5 WOKV on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill is here with us. I'm Wally Conway, enjoying the day together, taking your calls at 855-765-1045. Gutters, baby.
Yeah.
Gutters. You know, I've been fanatical about gutters for decades. I love the gutters that I had on the house out there in Scott Mill. I had the gutter helmet on, so I never had to clean them out. And what I've discovered now that I'm a condo dweller are gutters are as or more important in the condo world as they are in the home world.
Well, your area, I know there's a drainage issue.
Well, yeah, I'm on the third floor, so I'm not too concerned about drainage. But, yeah, the people on the first floor are really grateful.
Three floors there?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Some of the buildings are four floors.
Four floors?
Yeah.
Do they have an elevator for old guys like you?
No.
Oh, my
God. 22 steps from the parking lot to my...
You counted the steps.
About 10 times a day. Yeah.
Do you make Tanya carry the groceries, or do you...
No,
What a good sport you are.
Yeah. We have a lot of groceries delivered to the office that I bring home.
Oh, okay. So that's an extra step.
And veggies and all that.
Is that what you consider your workout?
It's one of them. It all counts. You know, I get my 10,000 steps in.
Oh, okay. All right, okay.
I get half my 10,000 steps are going up and down out of the condo.
Okay.
So anyway, back to gutters and condo living. When when it pours rain, I'm on the top floor. I've gutters around, they're around the entirety of all the buildings, but in particular at the balcony. So all of that water sheds into the gutter rather than rolling or blowing onto my balcony floor. So it works out great. And a lot of people, especially top floor people in high rises and condos and whatnot, if you've got a good size roof in a big building, there is sheets of water cascading off of there.
Yeah.
And then what happens if the wind is blowing in just the right direction, all that water ends up on your balcony and get your furniture wet and all that stuff.
Sure.
So we've been there almost 3 months now. I've yet to have it rain hard enough or the wind blow strong enough from the...
What exposure do you have?
The balcony, the primary is the south exposure.
South. Well, that's just pretty safe, you know.
Yeah, and then I've got the secondary exposure would be east.
Mm-hmm.
There's no northerly exposure.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And the westerly exposure is blocked by another balcony wall.
That's good,
so
too.
I've got a protection.
The drying rain out of the west, so there's a lot of rain that comes out of the west.
And I'd say 80% of my southern exposure is obscured or protected, whatever you want to call them, by some good-sized trees.
Mm-hmm.
None of that does you any good on the water that comes off the roof.
Right.
Because it's on the roof and there it is. So we have really nice furniture, but nonetheless, out on the patio furniture that's got nice cushions and It's not plastic. It's fabric of some type with cushions.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing has gotten wet in almost the 3 months we've been there. There's never been sufficient rain. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Rained.
The gutters are working.
It's definitely rain.
Keep that off. And that's a big deal. That's what keeps reduces the mildew you get, the degradation of your fabric, and all that other jazz.
Right.
So I can sit out there in a pouring rain, and I stay dry. I've got books that live on my balcony. It stays that dry.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's not glassed in.
Right.
Just the use of the gutter. So I encourage you. In your homeowners associations, or if you're a townhome or condo is such that you're self-contained for your guttering, gutters makes that so much nicer. So much nicer.
Oh, yeah. Keeping a gutter, and plus it makes gutters are very important.
And to your point, for those folks on the first floor, or if your condo happens to just be, you know, two floors where you're first floor and above, it helps you regulate the water. It's 6:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News, traffic, weather, and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 6:36 here at 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Larry O'Neill is here from Larry's Garden. Gosh, we're having a good day. Love to hear from you. Here is that number, no matter where in the world you are, including the International Space Station, 855-765-1045. You know, the new year, a lot of times people are looking at the house saying, okay, honey, we've been thinking about this forever. Now it's time to make a change. One of the areas that's really common is tired old siding. Maybe houses from the 80s had the T111 siding. Maybe a house from the 90 had some of those really crappy.
That was a complete failure, T111.
Well, it was a placeholder. Got a lot of houses built. The growth of Jacksonville in the 80s.
It did, but
multifamily and single family.
It never held up. I mean,
no. It was a bad idea.
It was a bad idea.
It was cheap. It was fast, and that was its only redeeming grace.
Versus
it wasn't very attractive. Yeah. So from the 80s, T111 type sidings, which is essentially plywood. From the 90s, a lot of these really junky composite sidings. Louisiana Pacific inner seal siding would be an example.
Right.
Others, Masonite, some really crappy sidings in the 80s and 90s. And now you're like, okay.
Hardy board now.
Hardy. That is the way to go.
Yeah,
Hardy
rods,
being a brand
rods.
Name
right.
of a cementuous fiber board.
Mm-hmm.
You could put this stuff under water. You can build termite homes out of it that, you know, shelters.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing destroys this stuff. A little bit of impact, meaning if you run your car into it, actually breaks and fractures.
Flexible.
It's not flexible, but, you know, we don't have earthquakes or anything
like that.
So as a guy, that, you know, as a company, we look at thousands and thousands and thousands of houses every year. Virtually never is there a damage or an issue with hardy board, you know, cementuous materials.
Paintable.
Other than poor installation.
Yeah.
If it's poorly installed, it will last forever poorly installed. So if you're thinking about a change.
And it's inexpensive, really.
Yeah, and you can get it in 4x8 sheets.
Wooden lap siding, it's cheap, you know.
Well, yes and no.
Yeah.
The labor is essentially the same.
But you're covering a lot of
slightly
area.
Slightly cheaper, depending on whether you use sheets or lap.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you can buy it in lap.
You can buy it in lap. You can buy it that mimics several types of shingles. There's probably 20 to 30 different shapes, sizes, and textures
that
it mimics.
They've got a lot of things available.
It's a fantastic material.
I've seen the shingles made out of plastic or polymers.
Yeah.
That looks pretty authentic, you know, pretty good, but it's still, you know.
My two cents, over time, it fades in a funny way.
It does fade weird.
I'm not really a fan.
It's not really that paintable, you know.
You can, but it's
not as hardy board's easier to paint.
I don't see the advantage of going.
It's porous, you know, it holds paint better, hardy board.
Some of the manufacturers make the argument it has a better insulation value when compared to it, but for my two cents, it's not.
Right.
Relevant or significant. Let's, if I can get my fingers going.
Okay.
Check in with Billy, see if we can help him with his citrus trees. Billy, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Morning, guys. How y'all?
Good.
Happy New Year. You're the first caller of 2020.
All right. Yeah. All right. Happy New Year to you guys.
No pressure, man. No pressure.
Yeah. My question, I grew up in Central Florida. Okay, so I had orange trees all around me, everything, all the oranges and stuff we ever wanted. Well, my job moved me to North Florida, and now I live in South Georgia. And I've tried to grow a couple of orange trees, and I just cannot make them grow. And I guess I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
Where's the best place to purchase a viable orange tree? And do you need more than one for them to pollinate or whatever? I don't know.
No, they don't need it. I mean, it does help them, you know. Certain citrus trees like the tangelo produces a lot of pollen. It helps to pollinate, but
you don't want
to
bet your whole crop on one tree either. You get yourself three or four. Get it going.
What part of Georgia do you live in?
I live in North Camden County, which is about 25 miles over the line in Georgia.
You more inland, or are you more toward the coast?
More inland, probably. I guess 30 or 40 miles from the coast.
Okay, so you're right on the margin right there, but. If I was going to take a place to you know, figure out where to plant and what type to plant, the first thing, what type to plant is you want to plant one on Flying Dragon citrus. Flying Dragon citrus is the rootstock.
Yeah.
It's it's much more cold tolerant. Okay, so it can
And
you can always plant kumquats. They're one of the, or in Kalamundo, those are small fruit citrus, you know, but they're edible. Miwa's sweet. But if I was to plant one in it, I would plant on the southern exposure, because that's plant near the house. If you have any masonry walls, plant that near the house. Also, under some tree or under some tree cover. You know, if you have trees that are not dense
wind, protect it from the frost.
And protecting it from the frost. And also under trees, it's probably 5-6 degrees warmer.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so.
Because I did the opposite. I planted it thinking it needed sunshine.
No.
I planted it out in the open.
Yeah, now in the open it's going to get cold, especially on depending on what side of the house you're planning on. You know, if you're planning on the north side, that's going to be very cold. You're going to get all that northeast wind coming down, and that's going to be cold.
You're almost away, Cross. I'm going to guess your cold is 10 to almost 20 degrees colder than ours.
South side of the house, masonry wall. You know, those are the type of things you could do around tree cover. You know, you don't want to block out the light completely, but citrus does grow in shade. It's one of the few and will produce fruit in shade areas. Because, Wally, your property is very shady.
Yeah, I had high filtered light from pine trees.
And it did produce. So there's another thing. And then also you want to make sure that when you're getting a cold front coming through, you want to make sure you water 24 hours in advance. That will increase durability of the plant.
Speaking of the cold, which we know we got it coming, is this the time of year to plant one, or should I wait?
In your particular case, I'd wait. Then you can always cover. Flying Dragon citrus is a dwarf, and you could always you know cover the tree. You know, because a 20-year tree may only get 10 foot, 20-year-old tree. 10 foot.
Yeah. I want a big one. If I ever make one grow, I want it to be 20 foot tall.
You don't want to bet your whole citrus future on one tree. You can get disease or other damage. You could have a branch come down and damage it.
Get three or four of them. Bill, you're going to have to get a Flying Dragon citrus. I wouldn't advise you to plant anything else but Flying Dragon. And one of the unique things about Flying Dragon is that it is a dwarf. Okay.
Okay. Well, give me a location where I can buy these.
I don't know up there in Waycross or that area up there, but any of your local garden centers can usually order you one and say you want on Flying Dragon rootstock.
Okay. Flying Dragon rootstock. All right, man.
Thank you, then. You can order it, too, over the mail. You can do a mail order, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
And what about fertilizer real quick? Just a regular citrus fertilizer? Or?
I like Espoma. Espoma. It has organic elements and regular chemical elements to it. So it's a Espoma citrus tone is a great fertilizer.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
You have a great day.
Hey, y'all have a good year, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. Check in. Let us know after you make your selection.
Keep us informed.
How
it goes during the year as you get your planning going. All right?
Okay. I will. Thank you, sir. All right. Bye-bye.
One of the things I guess I learned either the hard way or the easy way with a citrus is to bet your citrus future on a single tree is a bad decision.
Yep.
So I ended up with 9 of them.
Wow, the homeowners must have been happy about that.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't pick the fruit.
You know, it's so funny about homeowners, you know, when they're buying a new house, they always get excited about having a fruit tree on the property.
Especially people who are relocating from the north.
Oh, yeah. You know,
If I were a real estate agent and I took a listing, I'd go out and spend $50, $100 and make sure there was at least one citrus tree in every one of my listings.
That's a great idea.
And you put that right in the MLS, right in the Zillow, like citrus trees. And there are people like, oh, look, honey.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, it's so funny when I answer the phone sometimes. People, interested in landscape, and they're from like New Jersey or New York or, you know, Maine. He says, well, what were you wanting in your landscape? You know, what kind of plants would you like? He says, we want hibiscus, we want citrus, we want banana. You know? They go down, they say, we don't want any evergreens.
So they want
that tropical stuff.
Ended up with 9 citrus trees. Yeah. All bought within a 2 or 3 year spread.
Mm-hmm.
And with 9 in any given year, 3 did really well.
Yeah.
3 just kind of chugged along.
Yeah.
And 3 did basically nothing.
Right, right.
Which died. But to bet on a single tree.
Right.
And all of a sudden it's 2 years, 5 years, 9 years later, and your singular tree croaks. To me, that's not the play.
Then you're out of action for a while.
From a landscape design, which I'm not a landscape designer, if I had a signature citrus that I wanted to use as a centerpiece visually.
Right. And plus for fragrance.
Right. That's one issue. But when you're sitting and saying, I want them for smell, I want them for fruiting, I want them for just a general, wow, I feel good.
You can have a citrus tree hedge. Citrus tree hedge.
If you buy them smaller, like 5 gallon size, less than $50?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Not that bad.
Right.
And man, as they get bigger, they get pricey.
Oh, they do.
You get up to 20 gallons or 50 gallons.
$400, $300, $500.
Yeah.
You know, they're expensive. That's not including the planting. You know, they can get very expensive.
Well, I did it myself.
Yeah.
I was frugal. Let's check in with Glenn, see if we can help him out with his roof leak. Glenn, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
How you doing, guys? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
You as well.
Yeah. I've got a little, you know, all the rain we had, I'm in St. Augustine, all the rain we had last week, I got a little bucket up in the attic. It's a 9-foot ceiling unfinished attic.
Yep.
And I've got less than, I'd say, between 1/2 inch and 3/4 inch, all that rain we had last week. So I got no staining on my boards. I got one little spot that I can see on one of my ducting for my air conditioner where it dripped.
Did you isolate where it was dripping from?
I've got where I can catch it in a bucket.
Okay, that's where
but
it's dripping from. Could you sort
of?
Okay. Well, a couple of ideas.
I've got a 45 degree roof.
Nice. A couple of ways to go about it. One, you can call your favorite roofer. Vitus is the guy I go to. And interestingly, they're based on State Road 16. They just built a beautiful facility down there. You call Vitus. They can come out and troubleshoot it and solve it for you. That would be a simple way to do it. One of the things that we do in the inspection world is we'll troubleshoot a roof leak like that with an infrared camera from the attic. So it lets us isolate from the inside the highest point of origin and then go to the roof side and see if we can figure what the imperfection is. How old is the roof?
It's less than 5 years old.
Less than 5. Did you have it installed or was it original to the home?
No, it was a model, a modular model home. They moved it in, you know, from the lot to my house.
Ah, is there a seam in the center?
I don't think it's leaking there though.
Where it comes in and where it comes out, that's the challenge.
Right. When they first did it, I had a really big leak with a lot of staining, and they fixed it. So I think it's still from that little area, but I think it's like maybe for top of a rafter, and it's just running down the rafter.
Right. That's what I say, where the water comes in and where it shows itself in the interior usually isn't the same. Based on what you've described, you got to believe that ridge cap, that connection point between the two halves of the modular home, is always the suspect. I begin there and work my way down. The other thing is you may call, depending on how you purchased it, if you have access to the technical people who put it together. Sometimes there's guys are really good at troubleshooting. But I go one of those three routes. The fact that it's modular, if you have access to the people you bought it from, they may have a guru at troubleshooting those and go that route. A traditional roofer, I'd go Fidus. And if they all fail, you know, you can have us come out and use an infrared and moisture meters. We can virtually always isolate the source. It's in 25 years, I don't know that we've ever not been able to sort it. But your choice.
All right.
How did you know it was leaking? You just happened to be in the attic, or where did the leak show itself?
Shortly after the hurricane, I had some staining on one of my bedrooms downstairs. I went up to the attic, and I didn't see any wet anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I saw one little drip, an eyedropper drip on my insulation.
Yeah.
I have the blown-in insulation up there that I can get to.
Right.
Oh, I put a bucket there immediately.
Good job.
Since the hurricane until last week, I have not had any water in it.
So my money says that during the hurricane, something got blown just that little bit loose, that in the heavy wind and the driving rain, it came in, and it didn't all the way reseed itself, which is normal. And this latest storm was just the right direction, just the right amount of water that went in that same place. I'm willing to bet you it's the intersection of the buildings where the ridge cap collects between the two, connects the two. But check it out and get back with us. If you need us during the week, you can call the office or go to the website and get the phone and whatnot. That's gohomepro.com. Okay?
All right, Wally. Thank you.
Thanks, Glenn. Good luck with it. It's 6:52 here at News 104.5 on Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Right back to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:57 here at 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's News and Talk. Wally Conway from Home Pro. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden, which reminds me, should you be taking on in the new year a re-landscaping, be it large or small, at your house, something to consider, Larry'sGarden.com. Lots of great ideas there. 2,000 active bloggers, videos, FAQs. You got all kinds of stuff
A million
that may very well give you everything you need to do it all by yourself. Or you can make the decision, by gracious, I'd like to have this come out professional. You can have Larry's Garden come on out, design the whole thing for you. Then you can still do it yourself in steps or all at once.
Yep.
They'll even deliver everything for you if you'd like to have them drop it off and you do it all yourself. Or you can have Larry do it all. It's really pretty cool.
Yep.
They can take care of it all. That website is Larry'sGarden.com. The telephone number is 346-1970 for our Palm Coast, Daytona, and even Brunswick. People outside of Media Jacksonville, you'll need the area code 904-346-1970. Buying a new house in 2020 or commercial building, gohomepro.com.
All friends buy a house.
Without 18-month warranties.
Exactly.
Yeah. So everything you need in due diligence for that building you're about to purchase or prepare for sale is right there at gohomepro.com. The inspections, the wood-destroying organisms can be scheduled, the termite report, any environmental sampling, be it water sampling, lead sampling, asbestos, any of those good things, that all gets taken care of there. Every single home inspection comes with a $100,000 warranty position in place to protect you, including a five-year roof protection plan, and that also makes you eligible for the 18-month home warranty. Friends don't let friends buy 12-month warranties. GoHomePro.com. Here comes the phone number. Operators are standing by right now. 268 8211 for our friends outside of the Jacksonville area, 904-268-8211. 7 o'clock here at News 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's news and talk. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, then more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. We'll be right back. Good morning. 7:06 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Home and Garden Show. The Home and Garden Show is heard every single Saturday morning right here on 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's news and talk. The Home and Garden Show features Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden, who brings us 25-plus years toiling in the soil, sharing his thoughts, ideas, and observations of the week on all things related to landscape and hardscape, and taking your calls, answer questions, your commentary, what's been going on in your landscape universe. Me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, sharing 25-plus years crawling about in attics and crawl spaces, diagnosing, troubleshooting people's problems in their homes and commercial buildings, sharing what we've seen or heard or challenges people have had with their homes and buildings over the week, and taking your calls. Hear your commentary, your ideas, your questions. We love that. The number for you to participate from anywhere in the world, including and especially our friends who are watching and listening the live stream on Facebook and YouTube all over the world. We're always happy to have you comment there. But the phone number is 855-765-1045. Let me give it to you once again. You ready, Larry?
Yep. 855-765-1045.
Happy New Year. For many people, it's a time to make changes in their yard as well as in the house. One of the things, this would be ideally the year to change, that most people, many people have in their home, and most people who do have it, hate it, is popcorn ceilings.
Oh, yeah.
That has to be one of the crappiest ideas in the history of construction.
It was popular, wasn't it?
Yeah, Antoine Popcorne.
Okay. Yeah,
he was a French guy.
A French guy? Okay, figures.
The popcorn ceilings are notoriously ugly. The day they are put in, they are ugly. Whenever they need repair because of a roof leak
almost
or something,
impossible to do.
Very difficult to match the texture. Usually looks horrible.
And no matter how much butter you add, it's never good.
And no matter what you do to make it better, it's never really that good. That is true. And something that often goes overlooked, especially in the earlier years of popcorn ceiling in the 70s, what made the popcorn pop, that texture, was asbestos.
Yeah, our favorite chemical.
Yeah, it is actually a wonderful building material.
Yeah.
And so there's asbestos in a considerable amount of the popcorn ceilings all across the countryside, as well as here in Jacksonville. Is that problematic? It's not problematic. It's sitting up there. You may have painted over it over the years. That's good. That encapsulates the asbestos. Where the popcorn ceiling asbestos becomes hazardous to you is during removal, because then it is what's termed friable.
It's airborne.
Airborne. Now you can breathe it in. That's not good for you. So it's important, if you're considering removing your popcorn ceilings, that you, one, have it tested for asbestos so you know yes or no. If it contains asbestos, you're doing the appropriate things to protect your home and family from that particular mess. We can do that for you at Home Pro, depending on the company you choose. If you're doing a professional removal, you want to be sure they do that. Whether you
I did it without even knowing it had asbestos. I can't believe it. But I wet it first.
See?
That is
one of the protocols for the removal, but
wet
you still want to know what you've... Yeah. What you've got, take
but you still
got
to sweep it up, you know. I mean, it's an issue.
Yep, that's true. So get rid of the popcorn ceiling, know whether or not it has asbestos, and have a beautiful new year. Smooth ceilings. I love smooth ceilings. You know the reason all ceilings aren't smooth?
Because they'd have made them not smooth.
Because it takes more time and expertise to get
it takes
popcorn, orange peel, all these other textures.
Oh yeah, to get
flat. We're not about the beauty of the texture.
Right, then cover up their drywall seams and everything else.
Crappy work. Yeah. Let's go over to Joe in Oakleaf and see if we can help him with his dripping vents. Welcome, Joe.
Good morning. I was just calling, talking about ceilings. I had several family members over the last week, and it was humid in the house. And I've never had a register where started dripping water. I was just trying to figure out what was going on, if I should be really concerned. Been in the house for 15 years, and it's the first time it rained from one of the register vents. It's the one furthest away from the HVAC unit inside.
Right.
On the northeast side of the house, and took the grill off. Of course, it was damp, and it created a puddle. It's never done that before, so.
Interesting.
A puddle. The humidity in the house.
Well, first and foremost, Joe, you want to affirm and assure it's not roof related. The fact that you've been there 15 years and it's never occurred is a little bit odd. But nonetheless, you want to absolutely affirm that it didn't originate on the roof. Once you've got that solved, the reason is condensation. And usually what happens is when you get just the right combination of temperature and humidity in the air through the duct, versus temperature and humidity in the attic, if that differential is just right, the air condenses. The humidity in the air condenses, it sweats, and it drips on out. The remedy for that is get on up into the attic, crawl on out there, get a good look around the area. And usually, if you do a nice job insulating that metal boot that the duct attaches to, if you insulate that well, that virtually always will stop it. You can do that very easily with a spray foam, which is really the nicest way to do it. Get a can of crazy foam type stuff. Just put a big ball of foam around it so you're insulating that metal. And by insulating the metal, the airs on each side of that duct metal are not feeling each other so that you don't get the temperature change, and that virtually always stops it. So foam around that duct, push your other insulation back around it, and you should be good to go for another 60,000 miles.
All right. Sounds good. 60,000 miles.
Yeah. Your results may vary.
So you're talking about the flex duct where it comes into the...
Where the flex duct meets the metal register. That, you know, the register is the piece on the bottom. The flex duct comes, and there's a metal boot, essentially, that allows those two things to penetrate the ceiling and connect. Virtually always, it's the sweating of that metal connector.
So foam that with the stuff that you put in, like the windows and stuff like that, the foam that expands?
Yep. Get a nice inch or so of foam around it, and then push your other insulation back up against it, and virtually always that solves it.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. It's an easy do-it-yourself as long as you're safe and comfortable crawling out.
It's a cool time of the year to get up in the attic.
Real good point.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Wintertime's the best time to do it.
All right, get up there in the summer. It's rough. Yeah.
Good luck with it, Joe, and check in. Let us know how it went. And be real careful in the attic. Your wife's not going to be happy with you if you step through it.
Well, that'd be a good reason to change the popcorn ceiling out, I guess.
you're like me. You're not.
There's a light coming through positive. The attic.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, down Interlochen. I love Interlochen. Check in with Christian. Got some plants and grass going on. Welcome, Christian. How can we help, sir?
Yeah, I got some baby banana trees, and they're not blooming. I've had them in there for right around a year, and I don't know what I can do in order to get them.
What type of bananas are they? You know,
they're the mini bananas.
Okay,
2020 is going to be his year. He's only a year old.
So, they have to be in the have the pseudo trunk alive and above the ground for 18 months to produce the first flowers. So if you're about a year, you're not quite made it that amount of time. 18 months to keep that trunk alive and above the ground.
How do we enhance that? What fertilizer?
Now, bananas, they love a fertilizer. So the more fertilizer, and they're not particular. Anything you got available in the garage besides assumption with a weed killer. But, a good one, if you want to go out and purchase one, would be any type of, citrus. You can use citrus tone on them. You can use it. Anything that is made for fruiting trees.
This is the moisture control.
Pardon me?
The moisture control fertilizer?
No. You want to use citrus tone. Or any type of fruit tree fertilizer. They're not really particular, the fertilizer on them. I mean, a lot of banana trees, I can't believe how many, because we had very mild winters, I've seen fruit on many banana trees.
Okay.
minute. All over.
You got to watch for frost and freeze this year. If it freezes, you're starting over.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you're frost or we have a freeze, which could be, is that, you know that's coming. Just cover that trunk up and keep it alive above the ground for 18 months, and you'll get your first crop. 18 months is Wally's warranty, the 18 months warranty.
That's it.
You got to have 18 months above the ground trunk, and then it'll produce its flowers, and then you get the fruit. All right?
Yeah. Also, with my grass, yes. I'm living in Putnam County, and a lot of Putnam County has like dirt for grass, and I'm trying to get something to grow, but I don't know what to go with. Something that's low maintenance because I don't have a lot of time, but something that'll grow pretty well in shade as well as sun.
Well, the stuff that grows best in shade as well as sun is going to be there's some shade tolerance oyster, which is the best one I've ever grown in the shade, is Jammer. And then the St. Augustine, you can use Seville. There's several different kinds. Palmetto is good in shade.
I heard St. Augustine was very temperamental.
It has its temperamental moments. It does.
I hate St. Augustine for the record.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
It's ugly.
And, Jammer, if you want to grow zoysia in the shade, I mean, I've never grown a better shade variety. Of course, if anybody wants to give me some new zoysia to try it out, I'll take it. And I'll give it a shot. But Jammer I have in the shade on the north side of a Chamard's oak tree and a north side of a willow oak. And it's thick. It took about 8 to 9 months to get full in that area, but it's thick. It's pretty dense. It's surprising how dense it is. Usually grass, no matter what shade variety you got, is not going to be as thick in the shade. So, but this one's pretty. It's pretty thick.
And you said that's Jammer?
Jammer. It's University of Texas variety or North Carolina. I can't remember. I think maybe it was developed jointly with them. But it is one of the best ones. It's more upright growing. And one of the good things about Jammer zoysia, if you're growing in the shade, is that it has a good recovery rate. Because normally zoysia is slower growing. And because it's slower growing, it doesn't recover from damages easily. So, but that one is one of the fastest growing upright. We planted that where a lot of big dogs were, and it worked out good.
Okay, I definitely appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks, Christian. Good luck with it. Let's check in with Cole over in Orange Park, see if we can help him with his grass. Welcome, Cole.
Good morning, folks.
Good morning.
Hi.
My question is, in September, I planted some rye seeds.
Yes.
And it came out pretty nice.
Uh-huh.
I just mowed it a week ago because it was really out of control. So my question is, what's the procedure now to augment the grass back into the soil? Because I'm going to put regular seed of grass in there. That's not an annual.
You want to keep the grass alive? Do you mean the ryegrass alive during the summer? Is that what you're trying to do?
No, I'm trying to.
You want to reseed? Oh, okay. You want to reseed a lawn or just some more annual grass?
No, a lawn.
Oh, a lawn. Okay, that's a good. That's a good idea. I've been reading a lot of stuff on reseeding lawns, and we've reseeded some lawns before. The difficult part about reseeding lawn is timing and also to control the weeds. In California, where I'm originally from, reseeding lawns is what a lot of people do. Okay, not so much down here. But if you wanted to reseed a lawn, winter seeding seems to be the most popular thing. So when the soil temperature starts getting warm, it takes off immediately. So if you wanted to reseed, you could try with zoysia is a type you can reseed. It's a lawn-worthy grass. Of course, you can reseed with bahia. And bahia is not that great for your front yard. Or you can use centipede. Centipede is a grass you can use seed relatively slow to germinate. But because you're reseeding in the winter, you're getting that full-time allotment that needs and the sea, then the seedling, the seeds are getting fully turrid. That means they're absorbing all that water. And as soon as that soil temperature gets up, it will germinate. All right. So I would go ahead, figure out putting either zoysia down or a centipede seed right down right now.
Okay. On top of the ryegrass.
Yeah. 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 Just put it in there as the ryegrass goes away. Boom, you're up with the new lawn.
Oh, okay.
And then it's easier to manage the moisture conditions. You're not guessing on the moisture conditions. And then you actually, the ryegrass dying is going to provide some cover and keep the soil moist the first couple inches when it starts to fade out.
So I just put the seed right into the ryegrass.
Right in the ryegrass. And call us, let us know how it goes. Well, I'm anxious to hear.
Thanks a bunch, Cole. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
It's 7:21 here at News 104.5. Brief break. Jumping back on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. 7:25 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Enjoying the day together. Taking your calls at 855-765-1045. Special shout out to those of you listening around the world on the WOKV app at WOKV.com or on Facebook as well as YouTube. We stream live so you can see us having fun while we're here sharing thoughts and ideas with you. So also on the live stream, it allows you to post pictures, post videos, ask your questions or comments there. And again, the phone number, if you'd just like to use the traditional way, of 855-765-1045.
All right.
Lead paint.
Yeah, old houses. But what year did they quit putting lead in?
According to the Lead-Based Paint Prevention Act of 1978.
78, okay.
1978 is when the regulations got to the point that said no more lead in paint used in a residence.
So maybe 3 years after that, maybe they used all the lead paint out.
Well, no. There was a precursor to 1978. So as of 78 is when they said no.
Okay.
That doesn't mean people didn't still do it. People still do it now because there's lead.
You can buy leaded paint?
Yeah, not for residential use.
Okay.
But many paints have lead in them.
Commercial. Yeah.
And commercial uses for boats and cars and airplanes and bridges.
Right.
Paint ends up in strange places once it gets in the bucket.
Right, sure.
Also, there is a requirement. Mm-hmm. It's regulated nationally and administered state and locally. If you're doing construction in your home and it's pre-78, mm-hmm. there is a statutory requirement that you test for lead paint mm-hmm. to assure is that wall that you're knocking out or this place that you're doing what you're doing, does it have lead, yes or no? Yeah. If there's determined that there's no lead there, mm-hmm. now you can act irresponsibly and do whatever you want and make a big mess. If there is lead there, that requires some process and procedure for containment so that that lead dust does not spread throughout your house and you don't breathe it and damage yourself or a family member during the process. It's also intended more than anything, believe it or not, to protect the people who do that work all day, every day.
Right.
So if you and I do something dumb on a one-time basis, likely not going to die of lead-based paint poisoning.
You have to ingest. How much do you have to ingest or to inhale?
Well, it has to do with the change in blood level.
Right.
There's actually a natural blood level. Your blood naturally contains some amount of lead, and they discovered this by taking blood samples of indigenous people in the Amazon and stuff sort, that lead is in people's blood. That's natural. But as it elevates, that's when we begin to have problems. And what they've done over the decades is they've continued to lower and lower and lower the threshold that's considered unsafe in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
So the simplest thing to do is avoid those things that are avoidable.
Right.
You can't avoid them unless you know they're there.
Right.
When I say avoid them, meaning take the proper procedures and protocol not to absorb more into your system. Once it gets there, it tends to stay there. We don't pee it out like many other things.
You have to take some drugs to chelate.
Yeah, there's a process called chelation.
Right.
It's not a pleasant or good thing.
Right. But,
you know, guys like us who grew up maybe eating lead paint were in our 60s when lead was ubiquitous.
Everywhere.
It was everywhere.
They were sanding the walls before they painted it and everything.
So
dusted,
what's important to recognize is it's additive.
I mean,
it's a cumulative life dose.
I used to wade through asbestos on the floor
that
of the
wasn't
deck
good
of a
either.
Ship.
Well, as I watch you, I can understand why a lot of those things occurred. It's 7:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic weather. Then jumping right back on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. We'll be right back. I can't wait to talk with you more. Home and Garden Show, 7:35 here at 104.5 WOKV, Jacksonville's news and talk station. Let's go over to Arlington, check in with Carlton. Got some thoughts on JEA and sod. JEA and sod, those things are kind of related. Welcome, Carlton.
Good morning. Yeah, I a couple days ago, JEA called and said that I have extreme water usage for the last couple days. And I was kind of wondering, you know, I checked for leaks, no faucets and anything like that. So what can I do to find out if I do have a leak somewhere?
The first thing to do, and just to be sure, they didn't ask you for money, right?
Not yet.
Okay. Because anyone that says they're calling from JEA asking you for money, that they're going to turn off your power and ask for your credit card, that's a fraudulent call. So just to be sure that didn't happen. All righty. So here's how you check to see if you have a leak. Go on out to your water meter. Look at the face of the water meter. You usually got to dig the dirt and dust away from it. And you'll see a what looks like an odometer. In your car, a bunch of numbers. You'll see the numbers, and then you'll see another hand, like a sweep second hand, that measures flow also. And then there'll be a kind of a diamond shape little device down there. It's maybe a quarter of an inch, half an inch across. And that's a leak detector. So with everything that you can turn off inside the home turned off, no water running, you're not doing laundry, turn everything off. If that leak detector, watch it for 2 or 3 minutes, is sitting still, you have no leak from the water meter forward. Okay? If that thing is moving, it means water is going somewhere. So then you want to determine, is it from the meter to the house or is it inside the house? How you do that is you go to the shutoff valve that shuts off the water into your house, that last valve or first valve right outside the wall, shut it off.
Okay.
If you shut that, when you shut that off, go back and check the leak detector. If it's the leak detector is still moving, that means the leak is between the meter and the house.
That's easy to fix usually.
Yeah, it's less problematic typically. And if the meter has stopped, that means the leak is inside the house, and then you go on to troubleshoot inside the house. Troubleshooting inside the house usually requires a plumber, unless it's related to a toilet. Because if it's a toilet, it's leaking internal to itself.
Right.
So, you know, you don't see any leakage or spillage. But that's how I'd go about that as an initial troubleshoot. And then if you're unable to isolate it, sometimes JEA, I do believe, will send a person out to do that inside or outside leak. Once it's known to be inside the house, that requires a plumber. That's how you go about that. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good. Now, with my yard, I'm in the process of starting up my daughter an area that's going to take about 2 pallets of sod, and she prefers sod. Thing on the same sod, and it's a heavy weeded area, and I need to get rid of those weeds. What's the best way to get rid of those weeds and the fastest way I can restart? I don't want to put down herbicide and then wait.
Well, yeah,
drone strike will do that.
Well, you know, 2 pound size around 1,000 square feet, 800-1,000 square feet. So that's not too bad. Is it any dollar weed?
It's dollar weeds, everything you could think of. I mean, it's
so you got every kind of weed there. Well, if you got dollar weed, you're going to have to use I'd use some 2,4-D, you know, before you plant and then a little bit of Roundup at the same time. And you're going to have to use at least two applications, maybe more. I've done it, some areas I've put down 10 applications of herbicide, you know, to get rid of the weeds.
Sounds like patience.
Yeah, you have to spray it. Then I've waited maybe 3 or 4 days and see if you got any, you missed a spot and go over it again. And then wait as a double application. I would say 14 days in between applications.
What's the pros and cons of Roundup in that situation?
Roundup kills a general herbicide, kills any broadleaf easily. You know, pardon me?
A thought cutter. Can you get rid of weeds that way?
Dollarweed. It will come back even. If you use a saw cutter on dollarweed, it will come back even more aggressive because you're cutting it up and you're dicing it up, and so you're going to be spreading it out everywhere. So it's going to be more problems.
So how long do you wait before you can put down fire? Once
the last application of herbicide, about 14 days.
Okay.
14 days, and that, you know, because you know it's still active in the soil, and you put it down, it can kill the grass.
Right? How does the cooler weather impact his timeline?
No, not really. Not really.
Okay.
I mean, make sure you spray the herbicide in a warm day. You know, that's how you get it's quicker acting. You know, if you spray in a cool day, it's going to be slower on its takeoff.
Right. Okay.
If they have nothing but warm days, I mean, it's today I think it's going to be 80. You know what I mean? A good day to go out and spray.
Everything is growing, though. I tell you, it's starting to get hot. Yeah. But not today, it's raining. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Carlton. Have a great day. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Good time to be thinking about your water.
Right.
So
absolutely.
I want to reset some of the things we've talked about in 2019 about water quality in houses. Mm-hmm. And as you know, my trusted guy, Mark Kinder and his family over at Affordable Water. And it's interesting. I always say Mark Kinder and his family at Affordable Water.
Yep.
Yes, he has family members there. But after 30 years, they've got some people that have been there 15, 20, almost the whole 30 years.
Right.
And they're an extended family. So when I say Affordable Water, Mark Kinder and family, it implies the entirety of the team over there. Anyway, hard water.
Yes.
Let's go back to the beginning. Hard water, the origin of the term hard water.
Hard to clean.
Means it's hard to clean it with. That emerged organically.
I never guessed that.
Term hard water emerged organically from back in the day, quite truthfully, mm-hmm. when there were a lot of stay-at-home moms doing laundry and say, man, it's hard to get these hose clean, honey, and this hard water. Mm-hmm. That's how that originated,
right.
Both in professional laundries as well as at home. It was very hard to clean things with hard water. That's the origin of
your
the term.
Your hair, too.
Yes.
Hair, clothes,
clean anything.
Yeah, right.
So what makes hard water hard? What makes hard water hard is the dissolved solids in the water. One of the things we're notorious for here in Florida is our artesian wells that water percolates up through all these great minerals.
Right.
That was the search for the fountain of youth was essentially the search for hard water.
Right.
So it's these minerals in the water. So the question becomes to go from hard water that's hard to clean with to soft water, which is easy to clean with. They should have called it easy water.
It's testable. You know, you can test, you can check before you start and
test
when you get it, when you're done. And if it doesn't test out, then it's not soft water.
So what is the test testing for? It's the testing those specific dissolved solids. And the measurement is in grains, is the unit of measurement of hardness.
Right.
The zero would be the softest of water, meaning it had none of these particular mm-hmm. dissolved solids. Hard water is defined as 14 grain, actually extremely hard, because it goes from soft to a little bit soft.
Right.
And at the highest level on the scale is called extremely hard water,
which
is 14 grains. Well, truth be told, our average in Jacksonville is 17 grains. So we are up well into the extreme hardness scale.
Right.
Now you made the decision, okay, I want soft water. How do I do that? You do that by what's called an ion exchange in a water softener. That's what's going on. An ion exchange that's actually pulling those dissolved solids into the medium, and now you have soft water. Then the question is, how do you get an ion exchange? That is only facilitated by the use of salt. There is no other way. There may be some in some laboratory somewhere,
right?
But in a
residential
setting, in a commercial restaurant setting, the only practical way, the only known way, the only legitimate way to go from hard water to soft water is the ion exchange. The only way to facilitate that is with the use of salt.
And if they're saying it's not, they're not doing that, it's not soft water.
It's not soft water.
Right.
What does the salt do? The salt is actually cleaning the medium from which the ions have been attracted. So the salt isn't being induced into your water. The salt is used to cleanse the machine, the water softener, and then it's discharged. That's why it happens on a timer. Then people ask, does the salt end up in my water? And if I had to have a yes or no answer, the answer is yes. Is it measurable? Yes, in a laboratory setting.
Yes.
Does it matter? The answer is no.
Not really, yeah.
Here's what we know. If you don't have sufficient salt entered into your diet, your electrolytes get messed up and you die.
Right.
So the idea that I talk to people about water softening and the salt issue all
worried
the time.
Worried about salt. Sorry.
If you really want to have a fun conversation, take a person to lunch or dinner, but lunch is easiest, and have a conversation about water softening and salt. And watch them shaking this salt shaker
right
all over everything they're eating, saying, hey, I'm worried if there's a granule of salt in my water.
The food they just ate had 900
it's
milligrams of
preposterous.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It's absolutely preposterous. No. So how do I know all this good stuff? I know this by visiting the website affordablewaterjacks.com, by being in regular conversation with Mark Kinder and his team, and decades and decades and decades in the home inspection business with hundreds and thousands of customers who have water softeners, many of which are in disarray. How do you get it fixed? Affordable Water Jacks. How do you get it serviced? Affordable Water Jacks. And if you're like me and you're not a guy that wants to hump around 50-pound bags of salt, you got on a delivery service.
You can't hump around 50 pounds.
I can. I can't do four at a time.
Okay.
I could do one on each shoulder.
Yeah, and then they're looking at your softener as they're loading it and checking it, and so if you got a they see an issue, they can.
So that is my New Year's reset on the issue of soft water. There's also many other ways to treat water, which is why diagnostics become so significant.
And if you wanted to talk about your drinking water and save a ton of money on drinking water, but make your own drinking water.
Oh, bottled water.
Bottled water.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
That's dumb.
Yeah. Not drinking out of a plastic bottle.
Yeah.
You get your own glass bottle.
The only greater scam perpetuated on the people than bottled water was the attempted sale of JEA. they're one and the same. I think Aaron Zahn was a bottled water salesman before he was CEO of JEA.
Bada bing.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my thought on
okay.
that.
Okay. So. Yeah, you know, it's so funny, you know, some of the young workers, they want to go to this. I got to go to the store. I says, I ran out of water. I says, what do you mean you run out of water? They have plenty of water right there. You know, good. They have, you know, just drink it right there. Get it out of the faucet. He says, oh, no, we got to have. That's probably just bottled water they take out of the faucet, but I failed to put it in there. Yeah, what did we do when we were young? We were thirsty. We
drank out of the hose.
Drank out of the hose.
Oh, I just swallowed a lizard and a bug.
Yeah.
Protein.
It's better out of the hose, you know. I mean, it's so funny.
There are so many great things we did as young guys that are now DCF would take our parents away.
Oh, yeah.
You're hungry? You're thirsty? Go outside and drink out of the hose.
Right, exactly.
You know, drink out of the hose.
Take the hose off and drink right out of the faucet. You know?
And on and on and on.
Oh, yeah. It's just, it's incredible.
I rode my bike without a helmet.
Oh, I rode my bike without a helmet all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who had a helmet? They didn't, you know, no one had a helmet.
Paint the fence with lead paint.
Oh, yeah. Did that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was great.
Oh, yeah. We made it. But We were talking about blueberry propagation. A gentleman called in last weekend about blueberry propagation. We told him about heirloom. If you want to do propagation, this is the best time to do hardwood cuttings. Any plant.
Propagation meaning take one plant and turn it into four or five plants.
Hydrangeas, azaleas, boxwood. If you want to do, you know, keep your costs low on your landscape, this is the perfect time to do it. A hardwood cutting is about 6 inches long and about maybe a quarter inch in diameter.
So pinky, the diameter of your pinky or smaller?
Yes.
Okay.
And like we say, hydrangeas one, you use boxwood, azaleas. Many of these plants will respond to that. And the key thing is to make sure you get a very sharp knife or razor, and you're cutting right below the node and removing.
Do you cut it square or do you cut it
45 degree angle?
Why
you cut it at a 45 degree angle? Because you're increasing the overall.
Suppose more soft tissue.
More soft tissue can absorb more water because you compromise the root system. And the next thing is you make sure you got sterile soil and keeping the cutting moist but not soaking wet. And around 70.
You don't want to get fungus. Up in that wound. It's essentially a wound.
So anything you want to propagate right now, go out there and give it a shot.
Okay. My propagating years are over.
Okay.
7:50 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Jumping right back for the final segment. Your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. I miss you if you're gone. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 756 here on the final segment of the Home and Garden Show. Grateful that you've been with us. Last caller of the day is going to be Don, who's downtown. Got a paint question.
Hi. Welcome, Don. First of all, I'd like to say I love your show. I listen every weekend and every chance I can.
Thanks, Don.
And also, I was wondering, what dip do you recommend for paint chips?
I don't know.
What dip with paint chips? You know, here's the real truth of it. The reason paint chips were eaten by young children in peeling paint is there's a sweetness to the lead. It's also the same reason squirrels gnaw on the lead boots on top of plumbing vents. There's a sweetness.
And the Romans used to line their pipes and then also make wine in some lime.
In lead. There's a theory, thought that says the decline of the Roman Empire was actually they went a little bit goofy from lead poisoning.
Right.
On the periodic table of the elements, Big Bang, the periodic table of elements, the symbol for lead is PB, plumbing. Is the origin of that word and term. Mm-hmm. So, to answer your question specifically, now that I've given you some backstory, what dip goes with paint chips? It tastes just fine on its own.
Okay.
Thank you, and y'all have a great weekend.
All right, thanks, Don. Yeah. And you know, the demographic of lead poisoning in young children shifted in the 70s. Stereotypically, it was an urban inner city, impoverished home, tenement, ghetto type environment, because that's where there was lots of lead paint, and that's where it wasn't cared to, and the kids would munch on it. As the 70s and 80s emerged, and the gentrification of Springfield would be an example, gentrification of old neighborhoods and old homes, now all of a sudden the yuppification, there's all the yuppies in there with little kids crawling on the floor, and mom and pop yuppie with the sanders and the scrapers, the demographic of lead poisoning shifted from lower income urban people, children specifically, to yuppified, gentrified kids.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's how that happens.
You got to be careful. Do you think the classic house restoration is kind of waning? This old house is kind of not as popular as it used to.
No, I think it's as popular as ever. What's changing is which neighborhoods occur, where it occurs. So it's almost like a rolling wave. And even here in Jacksonville, you hear those kinds of issues all the time where we're moving into this neighborhood. Where do the local people go and all that? So we're going to talk about that another day. 7:59 here at News 104.5 WOKV. Grateful that you've been with us. Between now and next Saturday, do me this big favor. Use your turn signal.
Thanks.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.